I'm curious about the subtitle. So, first of all, there is an assumption in the title that you can learn excellence. So, I mean, we think about learned excellence, apparently you can learn it. But the subtitle fascinates me. And so my question is about, is excellence mostly mental?
Yeah, and I very rarely say absolutely, but I'm convinced. Alan and I started this process, and if I back up even further, for me it was a 30-year career, Dan. I spent the last 30 years as a clinical and performance psychologist and worked in multiple disciplines over those 30 years, right? I was 20 years in the Navy. The last 10 of those years, I was the head psychologist for the Navy SEALs, our nation's, top military operators. And then I transitioned into professional sport. Worked with the Dodgers, the Miami Heat, Red Bull athletes, and thousands of elite athletes. And then started working with first responders, started working obviously with high-end medical performers, lawyers. And then most recently, in the last kind of 5 to 7 years, a lot of business executives. And the reason I'm mentioning all that is I just had this epiphany. It started to kind of stick out. The data was very clear that what made the individuals who were considered the best in their craft or the best in their discipline really uniquely good was all learned. And it really could be consolidated, if you will, into kind of five main disciplines that we unpack in the book. And the old narrative that I used to believe, and I don't know why I believed it, probably because everyone thought that is this, I can never do what he or she is doing because they were born that way. That narrative, in fact, when you listen to the interviews we document in the book, it's not true at all. To a man and to a woman, irrespective of the discipline they're working in, and they've become the best in their, in the world in. Usually when you listen to their stories, it's a process. It's a process of coaching, parenting, failure, brushing themselves off, et cetera, et cetera. So long story short, I'm hell-bent convinced that, what makes the best performers in the world good is really above the neck and between the ears.
So, the book is Learned Excellence, and how are you defining excellence?
Great question. I think the definition of excellence in the context of this book would just be performing at one's potential. I've as a clinician and as a performance psychologist for years, I think initially when I got into the field, my goal was to make people who didn't feel well feel better. Think the typical psychologist. And then as I evolved and started working with higher end individuals, I really became professionally attracted to having a niche, if you will, in performance optimization and helping people meet their potential. So I think excellence is defined as, irrespective or irregardless of the craft that someone is practicing, are they meeting their potential? And are they really performing as best as they can with the tools, techniques, and disciplines that they can flex?
It feels a little like a ticklish thing, Eric. How do I know my potential? I get words in my mind like aspirational potential, literal potential, plus, those of us who have big egos, we maybe think we can do more than we can do, and those of us who, have poor self-concepts, maybe they feel like they can't do anything. How does one come to grips with what that is?
I think it's a combination of a few things. I think it's values, kind of identity over reputation. So what are those core values? I think it's one setting, it's one's relationship with goal setting, mindset, setting a process and staying consistent to that process, almost like a recipe, being able to navigate adversity, and then ultimately having balance and being able to recover to do that process again. So I think in order to meet potential, it really is a combination of what are my core values? How do I set goals? What's my mindset? Am I process versus outcome minded? How do I handle setbacks and adversity? And how do I remain balanced?
Yeah, sounds a lot like the main chapters in the book, right? I'm curious if someone comes to you and tells you a performance goal, they're wanting to do something. They want to win a medal. They want to whatever it is. Take me through the process that you would go through to help someone reach a big goal.
Reach a big goal. The first, I think, thing that one wants to uncover is why is that important? So the why, the engine we talk about in the book, we call it the engine. So A, what motivates them and why is this a motivator? Why is that performance goal, whether it's a medal or a big goal, as you say, why is that important? Ideally, my job would be to get them to see and attach intrinsic value versus extrinsic value to that. Meaning when you look at goals in general, and as you say, performance goals, they're more likely to be met if someone can attach intrinsic value to them. Why is it important to me as an individual? Why is it related to my core values or my identity markers versus extrinsic goals? I often use this as a great example. If my performance goal was to lose 15 pounds, it's not, but if that was my goal, and you asked me, why is this important to you, Eric? And I said, because I heard people say on the tennis court or pickleball court, wow, Eric looks out of shape. Eric looks chubby. Then that would be an extrinsic goal. I'm setting a goal because of something someone else had said or wanted, versus intrinsic goals are much more likely to be met. I want to lose 15 pounds so I'm faster and more flexible on the pickleball or tennis court. So first and foremost, it's a long-winded answer to your question. It's really important to find out the why of why this performance goal is important. Then the rest becomes much easier. We can just set and we can chunk that larger goal into very manageable, smaller pieces. And there's an approach to do that, right? You want people to be able to get the goal out of their mind and put it in writing, to share that goal with their ecosystem. We know statistics go up significantly in achieving goals. If you put goals to writing and if you share them verbally with someone else, accountability partners. And then obviously, I'm sure you've heard of the SMART approach to setting goals: specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. So you want people to really have an anchor and a timeliness and an approach to meeting that goal as well. So long answer to your question. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I anticipated that it would be relatively long because that's what the book is about. I just wanted to hear you kind of talk through how you might approach someone who comes to you with a goal. So you talk about focus on the process. And I like to think about daily rituals, but I don't want to sell myself short as I think about what you might recommend. You know, the difference between like focus on the process versus have daily rituals.
Yeah. So the way that we unpack this in the book, again, from thousands of high-end performers, is really the quote I like is amateurs focus on outcome, professionals focus on process. What does that mean? It means that if we focus on outcome goals, I want to run a marathon, or I want to win a medal, or I want to lose X amount of pounds in, you know, a certain amount of time, that becomes outcome driven. That becomes daunting, right? There's a whole section in the book about the human stress response. And if I want to run a marathon, that can become a very outcome-driven goal that creates angst, creates pressure. But if I focus instead on a very specific, you use the term rituals, I would say if we focus instead on a recipe, I like this metaphor a lot. Mm-hmm. If you and I go into a business together, which maybe is not a great idea, but if we decided to leave our day jobs and open a bakery together, and our goal was to make cakes to sell to the public, you and I might be very outcome driven, like, oh my gosh, Dan, all of these cakes need to look exactly perfect so that people buy them and we make a profit so we can buy more ingredients and sell more cakes. That's very outcome driven. Process driven to the same business would be, okay, let's take a breath. Every one of these cakes has the same five or six ingredients baked at 375 degrees for 26 minutes. All we need to do is follow the recipe, and we know that the outcomes are going to take care of themselves. So I would invite the audience to think about, instead of focusing on the outcome, focus on the process by which you're going to get there. Stay militantly consistent and efficient with that process, and the outcomes take care of themselves. Follow the recipe.
I find when I work with leaders that they almost always like to start with the outcome. And so obviously that sets a direction, right? Like you want to have a bakery, you want to make cakes. I mean that there's a direction. So it's not like it's a futile thing, but the work seems to be creating the recipe.
Exactly.
I'm tracking with, okay, I wanted to throw that out to you and get your feedback or your thoughts about it.
And I think when you talk about leaders, I don't, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, I'm coming from the military, obviously we had, I had admirals that I had to answer to and speak with often. And leadership is about having a strategic vision, right? So you, by definition, as a leader, one is going to see where the ball is going or where the hockey puck is going. But how to get there is in the weeds, right? And that's the tactics side. So tactically, we have to have a process in order to meet the greater vision. So I think it is important to have an outcome. And obviously, in business, there are outcomes, right? Whether you're making widgets, you're making computers, whatever it is, you have shareholders, stakeholders, et cetera. In professional sport, you need to win, right? So the outcomes are important. But if we focus so much on the outcome, we're losing the focus on what's going to get us there, which is the recipe or the map, if you will. So
You've already said this, but I think you have a bit of a soapbox here and you won't mind responding. And that is, what role do other people play in the development of our own excellence?
yeah, we say, I think we use the term kind of the board of directors or ecosystem. And I think it is, when you look at the world's best performers in any discipline, these individuals have surrounded themselves with either good parenting, good coaching, good mentoring, or for your listeners or for your readers out there, I would invite them to think about who is your board of directors, who's on your board of directors. So the ability to name maybe four to five people who can give you honest, vetted, valid feedback about how you are doing, and how you can make, iterative changes as a result of that feedback. So who are the trusted people? I think the people that do this poorly are the people that are taking feedback from individuals who have no business giving them feedback. And that sounds harsh for me to put it that way, but we have various examples in the book of, there was a professional athlete who was in a slump and was taking feedback from a Starbucks barista. And again, the Starbucks barista is very good at his or her job. I love Starbucks. I love coffee. I'm not criticizing baristas. But in order for that professional athlete to take feedback and then to demand to the professional coaches around him that, hey, I heard this feedback from a barista, so it must be valid and I want to make these changes. One has to be very careful with the ecosystem that one surrounds oneself with. So,
Yeah, someone said, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. I suppose that's a little soft for what you're saying, but it's a powerful truth. How can we contribute to the excellence of others? How do we help others become excellent?
yeah, great question. I like this from the leadership side a lot. And I think the very first thing it starts with is how we're modeling this, first and foremost. So if we're a leader or we're trying to contribute to excellence in those around us, we have to walk the walk, not just talk the talk. Meaning, are we modeling really being able to identify our values? Are we modeling setting goals, writing them down and verbally sharing them with people? Are we modeling a mindset? Can we identify what we think a mindset for success ought to be within different roles? Are we hanging out with people with similar mindsets? Are we focused on a recipe or a process? Are we modeling how we handle adversity? Are we practicing those things like, visualization and tactical breathing and positive self-talk and compartmentalization? So as leaders, are we practicing and modeling those things around? And then also, don't forget the most important piece, which is, feeding and watering other pillars of our lives, the balance and having time to recover. So I think first and foremost, the tactics aren't hard. It's making sure that we model those in, for those around us to see. So.
Okay, so you said a word that just always sends me, and that is visualization. And maybe I'm going to be way off base here. I've always felt like the idea of visualizing the win, although there's nothing wrong with visualizing the win, that's really inadequate. You have to visualize it, to use your language, the process of producing the cake. If you can't imagine it, you can't do it. So I get a little ticklish about, I'm gonna look in the mirror and say, I'm fast, I'm fast, I'm fast. No, that isn't gonna do anything for you except maybe frustrate you. So you can see
No.
I have feelings.
So I would invite you to think about it this way. Looking in the mirror, if that works, knock yourself out. But I would invite a different metaphor. I like the computer metaphor when we think about humans. There's the hardware piece of the computer, and there's the software piece. So you and I can go out and buy the most expensive, most state-of-the-art computer money can buy today. And that's going to have very efficient and effective hardware. But what's going to make that computer work is the software, right? Do I have the updated operating system? Do I have the most updated app on my smartphone? So if you think about visualization as a software skill, then I would invite you and others to think about it this way. You ought to think about the end, like what is that thing that you're trying to accomplish? And then software is using as many senses as possible to picture yourself at that end point. There's a wealth of research around this. Actually, there's a very famous neurologist who says that if your brain is firing, your brain is wiring. So we know that by visualizing, the reason visualizing works is it uses a model called stress inoculation. If I visualize giving a talk in front of 300 people and I'm using as many senses as possible, or speaking to a sales client in a really highly important, significant meeting, if I visualize the night before what the room looks like, the words I'm going to use, I visualize the approach I'm taking, and I use as many senses as possible, then by definition, when I'm actually in that moment, my brain has seen it three or four times already. So it's very similar to a vaccine model, right? The reason the flu vaccine works is it gives us a little bit of a bad thing in the hopes that when we see that real bad thing in real life, we have a physical coping mechanism, immune response that's better. So think of visualization as the same. You're preparing yourself for what you're likely to experience.
So we've come to the end of the time for our conversation. You have a second?
Of course.
You said visualize a bad thing. Did you actually say that?
Yeah. So this is controversial. It used to be controversial, not controversial anymore, where the top performers are actually visualizing contingencies for things that can go wrong. And they bake those into their process. So, for example, if I go back to a silly example. If I'm giving a huge presentation to a corporate client in sales, and I visualize, okay, what if we have a technology failure and my PowerPoint fails? What is my plan B? So I do think that the whole idea for elite performance, and to go back to your very first question about what is excellence, Excellence is being able, part of excellence is being able to control the human stress response under pressure. Whether we call pressure sport, whether we call pressure military, whether we call pressure a client interaction, people who are excellent can control their stress response and they control performance under pressure. So I did use in that term, visualize failure. Like visualize if this can go wrong, I need to have plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D in place so that I seamlessly can deal with that technology failure and still present to my client.
Yes, there's a proverb that says something about wise people anticipate adversity or trouble, and the fool presses forward and suffers. There's something about that. So I was struck by that. I haven't heard too many people say visualize a bad thing, but it's a method of preparation.
Correct.
Learned Excellence is the book, Mental Disciplines for Leading and Winning from the World's Top Performers.